another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artist by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking. On with the podcast. Hello, welcome to We Dig Music. My name's Colin, and with me as usual are my comrades and co-hosts, Ian.
Hello.
And Tracy.
Hello.
That was Tracy. I can't believe you just did that right down the microphone. It's disgusting. We're at the letter P.
Yes, we are.
As usual, we're talking about a well-known band and a less well-known band. Less well-known band this month is Scottish indie pop Legends of the Pastels.
Also, we've got a new feature, which is Ian doesn't do his homework and gets introduced to the band.
That's not new.
10 seconds before he... No, but I've never listened to
we've
them.
We've never recorded him listening to the first time ever.
Yes.
Which will be tacked on the end of the episode as kind of a bonus track.
Yeah.
So that'll be the Pastels, and a band Ian has listened to once or twice over the years, Pantera.
Yes.
Now, the weird thing is, you say about lesser-known and well-known bands, and a lot of...
No, Tracy.
And a lot,
Tracy,
a lot
what
of,
the fuck are you on?
A lot of the people I know don't know who Pantera are.
But a
are.
Lot of the rest
They've
of
never
the
heard
fucking
of
world...
It's not talking about bands that Tracy's friends know. It's talking about a big, well-fucking-known okay. band and a lot very well-known band.
Fair enough.
Like a global-spanning metal titan.
Yes. So...
Big fucking deal, Tracy.
What? I was just in...
It's about perspective. This is the P episode.
No, it's not about perspective. It's about actual fucking size of band and sales.
Yes.
Because if it was perspective, every band I picked would be bigger than all of the other bands in episodes.
This is why when you did your list, you got things like BMX Bandits on your list of big bands, isn't it?
Yeah, this is like this is why this is why I had to fucking suffer talking about Oasis, even though
they're
Opeth,
a big band.
In my world, Opeth are a bigger band than Oasis.
Yeah.
And they are constantly shitting upon Oasis.
But anyway, we've put that in the past. That's behind us.
Yes.
Yeah, that is.
We've put that in the pastels. Tracy. Tell us about Stephen and his band of pastels.
Okay. Are an independent group from Glasgow, formed in 1981.
Have you ever seen it say that before? I thought that's what it says on Wikipedia, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's they are an independent group, not they're an indie band.
And I'll get to that, and I will what it says independent.
Yeah,
you get to write your own, or you can edit your own.
Yeah, because you know I don't just copy from Wiki when I write these intros.
Boy, that's fucking word for word. Well, unless it's on all music.
She doesn't just copy from
No,
he copies from other places as well.
Yes,
exactly.
But describing them as an independent band, Napalm Death are an independent band.
Well, can I get to that? Because I've got a very relevant bit, but I'd like to get through at least the lineup
it's
first.
It's just a weird way of
saying
it. And I'll tell you why it's important in just a second. So, the original lineup was Stephen McRobbie, or Stephen Pastel, as he is more commonly known.
Stephen Pastel.
Indeed. On vocals and guitar, Brian Taylor, or Brian Superstar, on guitar.
Not Pastel. Yeah, Pastel.
No, the rest of them weren't called Pastel.
What the fuck?
They weren't related, like the Ramones were.
Or the Donnas.
Yeah.
Who also aren't related.
It was Martin Hayward on bass and Bernice Simpson on drums. They also had sometime member Annabelle Wright, or Aggie, join them a little later. That lineup dissolved after the second album. Brian and Martin and Bernice left the band. Aggie stayed, and she was now on bass, and Katrina Mitchell joined as drummer. Other key members over time have included Katrina's sister Alison on trumpet and Tom Crossley on flute. And as was common in the Glasgow scene, many other musicians would often contribute, with Gerard and Norman and Francis from Fan Club often being in the band, as well as...
The list of contributing members is massive,
yeah,
isn't it?
Almost as much as...
Reindeer section.
Yeah, that's not what I was thinking.
I did actually have to look up to see if Stephen Pastel was in the reindeer section at any point.
He wasn't. And also,
he must be the only one that wasn't.
Also, Eugene Kelly from the Vaselines and David Keegan from the Shop Assistants have been part-time collaborators.
Yep.
So they were an influential band in the UK independent scene in the 80s, and an absolute hinge pin of the Glasgow scene. Thurston Moore said about them in the documentary Teenage Superstars that Stephen Pastel is like the mayor of the Scottish underground.
With his own shop.
With his own shop, yeah, he's got his own...
Like Euronymous.
Monorail Records in Glasgow.
Helvetia Records in Glasgow. where there was this really... I'm surprised, Ian, you should have done your research on this, because there was an incident where Stephen Pastel actually murdered one of... it was the original bass player from Arab Strap. He took pieces of his skull... and
made necklaces from it.
So, although not the originals, the Stephen, Aggie and Katrina lineup is often cited as the most popular. It's my most popular. It's my favourite lineup.
Is it often cited by you?
And no. Your friends who think that they're more well-known than Pantera?
Yes.
Is Aggie, is that who you named your accordion after?
Yes. Absolutely. And my melodica is named Katrina. And that's mainly because Katrina had a spin-off band called Melody Dog.
You know your...
So melodica, Melody Dog.
You know you've got a an auto harp, but it won't quite go into tune.
Is that called Stephen?
No, I thought about calling
like
my...
Like his vocals.
I thought about calling my omnicord Stephen. just so I had a set. No, my auto harp that won't stay in tune is actually called Mabel.
Right, okay.
After Maybelle Carter. Because she made the auto harp sort of more fashionable.
That's not as funny as calling it Stephen.
It's not, is it? I didn't think of that at the time.
You know that you can just rechristen them.
Right? Yeah, you can.
Can you?
Yeah, they don't get confused when you start calling them by other names.
You've got to get the whole document and everything for renaming your instruments.
Oh, it's not like cats then.
What? You can't rename a cat.
Yeah.
No.
When we adopted Rasputin, he was called Bruno.
Oh, well, that's different. But you couldn't have a cat for like a couple of years calling it one thing and then call it something different from that point.
You could, as long as the intonation's in the same...
Although I kind of did that with my dog, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually.
You didn't want to call your dog...
As part of the war against terrorism.
Your dog originally called Islamic State.
ISIS. And who's now called Izzy. So, back to the Pastels. The core lineup now is just Stephen and Katrina. Aggie left some years back. She didn't want to tour anymore. Although she does contribute still to the artwork, she's now an artist. And she was actually a musical contributor on the last album in 2013. So they didn't actually release their first album until 87. They did a number of singles before that.
They were, what was it, 81 they formed?
Yeah, 81, and from between 82 and 86 they released 7 singles before they ever did their first album. And they've only actually got, I mean, they're still going to this day, they've only recorded 5 studio albums, but then they've also done a soundtrack, a couple of split albums with the Japanese band Tennis Coats, they've done a few EPs with Jad Fair.
I was going to say that you're not really still going if you haven't done an album since 2013, and then I realised that neither me nor Colin have released albums since 2013. I retract my statement.
But I mean, they've been together. Yeah, so they formed in 81. I don't think I honestly heard them until about 89 or 90 myself. I mean, I spent, you know, the late 80s being obsessed by Grebo and goth. And then I was...
Where did you first hear of them? Was it a mixtape?
Yeah, probably a mixtape. A friend would have introduced them to me. He put I Wonder Why and Nothing to Be Done on a mixtape for me. So, I mean, I became a reborn indie pop kid. But I mean, so getting back to this indie, independent. Ian, you know, you say you absolutely hate the description indie because you think it makes things sound shit.
Well, when it... a lot of the time when...
It's when you call bands that Ian likes that he doesn't consider
indie.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing is, Stephen Pastel would agree with you. He hates the term indie. He thinks it makes everyone sound underachieving. He prefers the term independent because he thinks that better describes how they operate, because they've always done it as this independent...
So the full word,
yeah,
as opposed to the abbreviation, which I guess, yeah...
Cause, it's well, you the know, tag indie.
If you're an abbreviation, you're not trying as hard as the full word, because you're only
also,
five of the letters.
Also, the Pastels, now, I like them, but they've got a very sort of lackadaisical. That's a word I've only ever read and I've never said before until then. Kind of vibe to them. They're really...
Yeah, like, because he doesn't try and be in tune.
And they're really sort of ramshackle sounding.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, like, everything you just played me.
They're shambling and fair.
I would say they are the fucking definition of indie.
What they sound like, to me, is demos. They sound like Gregor Samsa and Slowdive demos.
Okay.
I mean... Like, they saw themselves as outsiders. It was like a punk DIY approach. They knew the limits of their abilities, but they didn't let that stop them.
Yeah, I mean, they were big into doing their own sort of thing with fanzines and stuff, weren't they?
Yeah, they had a fanzine called Pastelism, their own fanzine, which, you know, used to announce what the band were up to. But the thing is, they've always been so... A lot of people would have heard the Pastels because they were included on the NME C86 tape. And he's always been categorised as that. And it's always really bugged him because he's seen himself as separate to that scene.
Does he think he's jazz funk or something?
No,
they're definitely fucking indie.
He's terribly flattered by other bands who said they've been influenced by him who are really fey and twee. But he hated, like, there was this thing called the Anorak scene. You know, really twee indie pop.
Is that like the sort of Sarah Records?
Yeah, totally. Like Tallulah Gosh, Another Sunny Day, Springfield, you know, the whole bunch.
I like what I've heard of the Pastels, but a lot of the time I prefer Tallulah Gosh.
Okay. Tallulah Gosh, I mean, I love them, but I love them both, totally. I mean, so Stephen Pastel has said, we're not some kind of cute pop song group. I don't think we ever have been, although obviously some people do. I absolutely loathe twee music. It makes me feel sick. I like it when music has got...
This is like reading that Philip Pullman thinks that his Dark Materials trilogy isn't fantasy.
Like,
your music...
Real?
No, he thinks it's like... he just has specifically said it's not fantasy. Like, dude, there's a talking fucking polar bear in it.
But that's the thing. I think fans are allowed to categorise a band even if the band don't agree with you necessarily.
We've said that before, haven't we?
That's the thing.
Thing is, though, like
that was in relation to who was it? Split up, got back together. Eels.
Okay, fair enough.
And it was actually Eels blokey. Was it Eels? No, LCD Sound System, LCD Sound System, and he was going on saying, like, I think it's totally okay for fans to...
To redefine how they...
Totally. Yeah. But, I mean, Stephen Pastel said, you know, I said, I'm not interested in making daisy chains and skipping through the park. And that's what the Anorak scene, twee scene is about.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, his music does sound like that, though, that's the thing.
I love that in it.
I had this massive image, because The Pastels are a band that I've known about but never really listened to much. I've got a couple of tracks on compilations, but I don't think they've ever sunk in. I've got there's Truck Train Tractor is on the Rough Trade Indie Pop compilation, and there are some songs on that compilation I know really well, but I couldn't remember Truck Train Tractor when I listened to it on the playlist.
Oh God, I love that song.
There's also, I think, they're probably on the Children of Nuggets box set.
Yes.
But I can't remember the tracks that...
I mean, they were massively into the Nuggets thing.
Yeah. But what I'm...
I'm still confused by that. Like, it's like when 80s Matchbox Beeline Disaster said they'd never heard the Cramps. Like, it's just... sentences that are clearly lies.
I mean, the Pastels really loved stuff like the Velvet Underground. They like their lo-fi approach to things. Stephen has said, I don't see any value in sophistication on a musical level. He likes what? A lo-fi approach to things. Shit production, you know that.
But the production isn't that bad.
Yeah, that's the thing.
One of the things I was thinking about is some of the songs could be Jesus and Mary Chain songs, but they aren't produced in a way that makes me want to throw it out the fucking window.
No, I mean they predate Mary Chain by
their albums,
some
don't.
Years. But I in fact, it's, do you know what? Mary Chain were at a Pastels gig when they handed over a copy of their demo tape to the sound engineer that there.
There's a shoegazy element to it. I'm gonna say,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just not enough.
To
pedals.
Some of the later stuff, I mean, the much more lush arrangements.
Literally everything you
levels.
Played, I could see. Like if I went in there and put loads of pedals down, and turned them on, then it would just sound shoegaze.
Yeah. What I was trying to say a minute ago, though, with so I've got them on these compilations, but they've never. I don't remember listening to them.
Mm.
So I was listening to them on the playlist when I was doing my homework.
I was being punk rock, goddamn.
Fair enough. I just had
Stephen
this...
Stephen P. would approve.
I had
exactly,
this,
I've got a lo-fi approach to podcasting.
I had this image in my head of late 80s indie kids in, like, flowery dresses just dancing around the room.
When you put the playlist on, the album title or the album cover, like he'd got slow dive hair. He'd got a bob.
Yeah. He's got a bowl cut.
Yes, exactly.
It's very much part of the scene at that time.
Full on slow dive hair.
I watched a video of
them
playing it. I think it was Primavera Sound Festival in 2013.
He's still got that haircut.
No, he hasn't. Because I've got on
is
here.
Is it a wig?
Stephen Pastel looks like Martin Freeman if he cut his own hair.
Yeah.
Because he really did.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Stephen said he wanted them to sound like a 60s group with an element of bubblegum.
Like
but he doesn't
bubblegum.
Like fey things.
And one... Yeah, I know.
Want it to sound bubblegummy, but not fey.
Okay. I mean, a Sounds review of their first single said it's the pure joy of amateurish pop perfection, crossing fibres of Jonathan Richman, The Turtles, Buzzcocks and Vic Goddard into 2 minutes of fresh, frail, sing-along naivety.
Yeah.
And they liked having this childlike approach to things. It was kind of a reaction. Contrived, perhaps. It was like an art movement, you know, trying to make things simple, childlike. But not Tweety or Faye. Yeah, I know, it doesn't... It's a contradiction, I know. But he doesn't like the twee tag.
I've just seen pictures of him. He doesn't like brushing his hair either, does he?
No, not at all. I mean, another thing that Thurston Moore said about them, he said at this time in the Scottish Underground, there was a real interest in writing classic heartfelt pop songs without having to subscribe to moneyed production.
Yeah, you can tell they're inexpensively produced, but they don't sound bad.
Mm.
They've got a drum sound that sounds, you know, it's not like Husker Du, the drums sound like drums.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It sounds like they went into a demo studio and recorded a demo.
Yeah, they've not gone into Abbey Road and
it's like,
recorded
this is what the songs sound like now let's produce them. That's
which
what
is,
it sounds
which
like
is
to me,
which
is,
fine.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't really know what they were doing when they started. And their sound has progressed and matured over time, and they've got much lusher arrangements, much more mellow feelings.
This is what I was going to say. Pretty much all of the earlier albums, I like them, but I could take or leave. I wouldn't necessarily put them on. Slow Summits, their album from 2013,
Beautiful.
Is absolutely fantastic.
And you know, I thought you'd like it because you know when we were talking about Teenage Fan Club and you said you really liked Gerard's Lightships. Well, because of course Gerard was a member of the Pastels.
Yeah.
They were recorded around the same time, Lightships album and
it's
Slow
Summits.
It's
got the Summits. Same person playing the flute all over it.
Tom Crossley, yes, it's the same person on flute. Some of them guitar lines, you can pick out guitar lines on Lightships album, Electric Cables, that are almost, it could have been taken from Slow Summits.
I had to look up on AllMusic to see how many people were on both albums. Yeah, and there was a few.
And I mean, Slow Summits, there was a 16-year gap between the previous album and Slow Summits. A bit Valentine's-esque there.
And Katrina is on lead vocals for most of the album.
Yes, because Aggie had left the band by then.
Good. Katrina's vocals are so much better.
But I adore Aggie's vocals. I love the way she's got like a slight lisp and it comes across, and it's just so endearing. It's so beautiful.
Oh, don't you? Sounded like you were going to cry for a second.
Yeah.
I almost could. Her vocals make me feel that. I think there is a song, I'm sure there is a song even on Illumination that is Aggie singing, because it doesn't sound like Katrina. I'm sure Aggie must have featured on one.
Possibly.
But even Illumination, like 16 years prior to Slow Summits, has got that lush arrangements.
Right.
The more instrumentation, I don't think
I listened to much on that one, but I'll go back to it. What it reminded me of, and I think I've worked out what's happened. So the Pastels were a massively influential band.
Massively.
Stephen works in and runs Monorail Records, so he's going to listen to a lot of music.
He's got his own record label.
I believe that Slow Summits is the sound of the Pastels being influenced rather than influencing, and that's a good thing.
Yeah,
because
it reminds
me mostly of Kinnicky's second album, mm-hmm. Get In, which is where they got into the sort of 60s pop kind of sound. And the other thing it really reminds me of is, have you ever listened to much by Stars?
What was that beautiful song, Your Ex-Girlfriend Is Dead?
Your Ex-Lover Is Dead.
Ex-Lover Is Dead, yes.
Right. Same album as that. There is a track called Sleep Tonight.
Right, I don't know.
Where it really sounds like Aluminium Song.
Yeah.
Which is the last track on Slow Summits. You need Set Yourself on Fire by Stars. You would love that album, Tracy.
Oh God, I'll go listen to that.
Definitely. I think they've filtered listening to other people who have been influenced by them, and they've filtered it back into their own music.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, they've always been not the band itself has always seemed secondary to everything else that Stephen Pastel is doing. I mean, they had their own label back in the day in the early 80s, 53rd and 3rd, the name taken from a Ramones song. And they released records for The Shop Assistants, Tallulah Gosh, Beat Happening, BMX Bandit, The Boy Hairdressers, who would later go on to be the Teenage Fan Club, Vaseline's. So, you know, they were really important to the developing independent scene in Glasgow.
Teenage Fan Club covered Nothing To Be Done, didn't they, on the Start Again single?
Yeah. They're so interlinked. But, you know, Stephen P's got a label now as well.
Stevie P.
Geographic, which is an imprint on Domino Records. So, you know, he's still influential now to new music coming out of Glasgow.
Yeah.
Bands like...
Well, he's been part of the scene for 30-odd years.
The Spinning Coin, who are a brilliant new band from Glasgow, are on Geographic Records.
Are there any bands from Glasgow with good names?
Bogwai.
That's about it.
I can't answer that, can I?
Well, you wouldn't agree on Belle and Sebastian, so no.
Jesus and Mary Jane? Do you know?
Even that's not a good name.
Do you know
name,
what? Originally,
it?
They were called the Daisy Chain, which is a terrible name.
What, the Jesus and Mary Chain were?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they were at a Pastels gig and they handed their demo tape on, who passed it on to Bobby Gillespie, who wasn't in the band at that point, and he passed it on to Alan McGee. I mean, but Alan McGee is a huge champion of the Pastels. He calls them the sacred fucking beast of Scotland.
Okay.
I mean, but even they released three singles on Creation, but then went off to record to do their next one with Glass. They weren't really a great fit for Creation because it was this whole thing of Stephen not wanting to be defined by the Twee movement, so he didn't want to be another Creation band.
Okay.
But it wasn't until really their fourth single they started to define. I mean,
are you still on your intro?
Second page of notes. So the first few songs were very Twee, very Fae, very childlike. But then the fourth single, Million Tears, had a B-side, Baby Honey, and it's when they started to develop this drone pop sound.
I was wondering when you were going to mention that one.
What, drone pop?
Baby Honey.
Oh, Baby Honey.
Gracie?
Yeah. Yes, I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say?
You're going to say it's krautrock.
I'm going to say it's wigging is what it is.
It's a
freeform jam for most of that song.
It's 6 minutes of drone.
Exactly.
And I fucking love it. Truck Train Tractor is another one. It's got quite a motoric beat underneath it, quite a motoric groove.
See, the thing is, I think this
so,
is
so
a
so
thing
apparently
that,
I've always loved krautrock. You've just got to have Stephen Pastel singing on it.
It applies to both me and Tracy, right? There's stuff that we both think is shit, and then there's bands that sound a lot like the things we think are shit that we love.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Ian, what you said when you were listening to him, you said his vocals are flat, and it's something that's been levelled at him a lot. His voice...
Because it's true.
Yeah, his vocals aren't to all people's taste. People say he can't sing. But
I'm not saying he can't sing. I'm saying he can't sing in tune.
I utterly adore his vocals.
I saw a fantastic bit of possibly accidental YouTube hilariousness. They had a what I assume must have been a VHS release called A Bit of the Other.
Yeah.
I was watching that on YouTube the other day, which is basically their videos plus some cut up bits and a couple of like.
There's some hilarious quotes from interviews. That. Unfortunately, I haven't written any of it down.
So you know how when you watch a video on YouTube, it then auto plays another related or supposedly related video afterwards. This was followed by a video called The Top 20 Greatest Rock Singers of All Time.
Nice.
I was like, you are taking the piss.
Stephen Pastel is not one of them.
He was not in the list. No.
I just want to circle back to this, right? Because you definitely use this phrase a lot, not to everybody's taste, and you use it to defend people who I've said are shit at something. Right?
Yes.
Like, his vocals are not to my... I'm not even saying they're not to my taste. They're flat. This is an empirical fact.
It is an objective
It's not
thing.
A matter of taste. It's a matter of actual fact.
But what you like is subjective. And the thing is, you could compare it to...
I haven't said that I dislike him. I did say that he sounds a bit like a drag queen, but that's different.
You did say
not
that.
Not like the Frankenstein drag queens from Planet 13, though, because they sounded quite a lot different.
People might listen to a death metal band and say that they don't like that... The death growl start singing.
Oh, yeah, but if it's in key, then they can't say he can't sing.
You can't be in key with death growls.
You absolutely can.
Yeah, you can. Michael Ackerfeld.
Well, yeah, all right. I give you that. But, you know, I mean...
And also, I don't like to mention Arch Enemy, but their singer...
Angela Gossow was definitely...
Alicia White-Gluz is a fucking phenomenal...
I've not
death
heard
metal vocalist. She's very melodic.
The thing is,
while screaming.
Something like opera is meant to be the cultural peak of singing. I fucking hate her.
Opera is
so
wank.
That's meant to be proper singing, and that was me air quoting there.
Yeah, but anybody that says that about opera is a cunt.
Yeah, but you know, you can't go, "Oh, he's a bad singer." You can say, "I don't like it."
Yeah. He does have...
Because, like, an opera singer is going to be a good singer.
His singing is slightly flat.
Yes.
But I like that.
Well,
I like
we know from
voice.
Many other things that Tracy likes things that are out of tune.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's fine.
I think there's a lot of the...
I just wanted to address that. Like,
no, that's
I don't want it going on record that it's down to my personal taste that I think he's flat. He's fucking flat.
It's different ideas of what... singing you like. There's also different ideas of what you think in music is fun, because a criticism levelled at me a lot by you two is that I've got no sense of joy in music, because I don't like Van Halen. But
and Ghost.
Yeah. But this
joyful bands.
But this is the music that I get pure joy.
And you love that Malcolm Middleton song, which I also like, which has the refrain, "Fuck off with your happiness."
If people say they don't like Stephen P's voice, you know, they're entitled to an opinion.
Not everybody's going to, but that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, we need to clarify.
Yeah.
Yes. Have we got much more on that, or... Tracy has got fucking 6 pages.
I've got nothing.
I could talk for years about them.
That will probably be for Tracy's solo Pastels cast.
Yeah.
I think Yeah, all right. Well, we'll round it up. I'm going to sum up with
on their fifth single.
I'm going to sum up with something that Laser Guided Blog said. He wrote a toppermost article on the Pastels, which is totally wonderful. And he just said, thus the joy of Pastelism. It's everywhere. A little rough around the edges, maybe. But isn't that all of us?
No.
No. I'm not entirely sure what that means.
Discipline.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Ian, tell us about Pantera.
Okay. Pantera was an American heavy metal band from Arlington, Texas, formed in 1981 by the Abbott brothers, Vinnie Paul, and guitarist Dimebag Darrell.
Diamond Darrell at that point,
with lead vocalist... See, Wikipedia, man, it says Terry Glaze, whereas we all know it is Terry Lee Glaze.
Yes.
And bassist Rex, at that point,
Rex Rocker.
Rex Brown, later... friends with him on LinkedIn, weirdly.
Awesome!
joined the band the following year, replacing Tommy D. Bradford, who was
Knows anything about at all.
He was the unofficial original, apparently.
What? That, Wikipedia, what the fuck are you on?
I don't know. They were originally a glam metal band, but I feel like we've stepped past that with our playlisting for the most part.
That's because none of the glam stuff is on Spotify.
I've heard a couple of them. They're fucking terrible.
There's Metal Magic, the first album with Anselmo on vocals. It's got a couple of alright-ish tracks.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I sometimes in the past have confused them because of the name. Pantera with Steel Panther.
What?
In name only. But that would tie in with the glam beginnings.
I guess, maybe.
Sorry.
Glam Terror, as they are colloquially known for the early stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Phil Anselmo was joining what year? For Metal Magic, wasn't it?
Power Metal. 1986. Metal Magic was the Terry Lee Glaze album, I believe.
Incidentally, have a look on Google. Just Google early Pantera pictures.
I've seen loads of their album covers. They're fucking appalling.
Their album covers are fucking hilariously bad.
Yep.
You know, the Wiki article actually says Pantera, not to be confused with Pantera, the genus of the cat family.
Yep.
And I thought also not to be confused with Panthro, which was the second best character after Lion-O in Thundercats.
Panthro, sorry.
You were in a band with a man who looked like Panthro.
I was, Keith. Oh, I
know,
in the ship.
I know someone who looks like Lion-O.
Awesome. Jesus. We need to get...
Let's get them both in a band.
Oh. Yes.
Yes, yes,
you know,
yes.
I went into the office a couple of weeks ago and my boss said, oh, you need to ring up the contractor and talk to him about Thundercats. I said, you what? And I totally misheard him. He actually said Thunder Codes, which is something on one of our projects. But I thought he said Thundercats.
You should have done that.
So I
did you ask him if he was on the loose?
So I did. I rang him up and I said, oh, yeah, the boss says I've got to ring up and talk about Thundercats. And he's like, what? And then I did mention Pantera. And he was like, oh, yeah.
Or Panthro.
Panthro.
Why did you mention Pantera when you were talking about Thundercats?
Because it was when I was also revising for this podcast. So we went from Panthro to Pantera and then had a chat about Pantera.
Excellent.
When we were meant to be talking about Thundercodes.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Moving onwards. They released several albums.
I believe it was three.
No.
Before the classic.
Before Vulgar Display.
Cowboys from Hell was there. They had an unofficial debut after they'd already released three records.
Yeah, yeah, basically. But yeah, Cowboys from Hell, 1989. Another good 1989 album.
Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely moved image, didn't they?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. They started off... I was listening to a podcast the other day where it was people were discussing Pantera. and one of the guys on there, it was the Thrash It Out podcast, which is pretty good, worth listening to.
Okay.
And they were discussing, it was Vulgar Display of Power, but they were discussing the sort of overall career. And basically, it was like Pantera saw how metal was going and changed their style and their image before it hit.
Yeah, I think it's probably between that and Anselmo sounding different to Terry Lee Glaze.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's still on Cowboys from Hell.
He's pretty.
He still sounds quite.
He's like, a bit Rob Halford on there.
He's
isn't
very.
He?
I mean, the previous album was basically almost. He was trying to be Rob Halford from Judas Priest. There's a lot of that influence still showing in Cowboys from Hell, and it's still got a lot of this. Cowboys from Hell released. It was released in '89. It's still very much an '80s metal album.
Oh God, yes, 100%. But it's great.
It is. I don't like it as much as a lot of the other albums. There's some tracks on there that I like individually as well as, you know, pretty much everything else they did.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Cowboys from Hell itself, the title track, has been my go-to riff as soon as I pick up a guitar to check it's plugged in for probably nearly 20 years.
What were the songs from that album that you put on the playlist?
Cemetery Gates was on there.
Right. Yeah. Which I like to refer to as the Batman song, because whenever that riff kicks in, I can imagine Batman driving the Batmobile.
I fucking love that riff. That screechiness. That twisted screeching. Yeah. I love that. I mean, I would have heard that first on your rock show, in fact.
Almost certainly.
You played it regularly.
Was your brother not into Pantera then?
Oh, I don't know. When did what year was that? I
mean, that was
same kind of time that Sepultura were doing things.
Okay, because I know he likes them, but I don't remember listening to them.
Because they were like the second wave of famous thrash and metal bands, like Sepultura, Pantera.
Yeah, and then
I know my
then they developed
Pantera.
More from the thrash. They basically became the progenitors of groove metal, essentially.
Weird though, and I know this is probably just a reference and possibly a lazy comparison, and I don't mean it to be unfair at all, by the way, because I really do like Pantera. To me, the sound, it's got a lot of 90s Soundgarden-y Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
That is just what I'm
Anselmo's
hearing.
Anselmo's melodic vocals are quite Chris Cornell.
Yes, I can see that, actually.
You know, but
that's
I mean,
Chris Cornell's quite metal.
He's also sung with Alice in Chains.
Yeah,
I've seen a couple of tracks of him singing with Alice, and he's fucking great.
I mean, that live
he's a
live track.
Vocalist.
Yeah,
that live track he put on This Love starts off Pearl Jam, but then I ditched the comparison because it got much heavier.
Yeah.
So
well, that was one of their ballads.
When I saw them play live, they had Anthrax and Slayer doing backing vocals.
Awesome.
The drawling vocals.
When was
that?
That
were brilliant.
That was. Ozfest.
Oh yes, the Ozfest where I had to go on holiday.
Yep, that's the one.
But I mean, going back to Cemetery Gates, the structure of that song is amazing.
Well, it's that's another one of their
ballads. So what year was that? Cemetery Gates.
That was on 89 on Cowboys from Hell.
I believe the fifth time in this episode. That was 1989.
Okay, sorry.
That Cowboys from Hell's also got Hollow on as well, hasn't it? Which
it
is
has.
Fucking great ballad.
Yeah. Oh, is it? I thought Hollow was on Vulgar Display.
Could be.
Yeah, it's the last track on Vulgar Display of Power,
yes.
Which is the same as This Love. And it also is the same as Walk, which is probably their most well-known.
Mm. So the heavy. First time I heard Pantera would have been when I first watched Noisy Mothers, because that was the break music.
Yeah. I never watched Noisy Mothers.
It was
great. That was an MT. That was basically the UK version of Headbangers Ball.
Yeah. He was on like ITV or something.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. It's the one that Crusher was on.
I never watched it. Yeah.
Crusher Jewel, fucking great bloke.
That's DJ Crusher, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to be DJing in between bands at Ozfest.
Yeah, and introducing bands and stuff like that. I met him. He's fucking lovely.
Awesome.
He gave me a hug.
Oh. What a nice bloke.
Yeah.
I was watching them do Walk live, some huge, looked like outdoor stadium sort of gig, and my God, the crowd participation in it.
I participated particularly well on Walk when I saw them at Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
Because I was right on the front row in the middle on the barrier, and it was like the third song in the set or something, and Phil Anselmo threw the microphone at me, and I sang the second half of the song.
Wait.
With Pantera. Before immediately having to be dragged out of the mosh pit over the barrier because I was getting fucking crushed to death.
Oh, shit.
It was a mental pit.
That's pretty cool.
It's a fucking such a driving, uplifting song.
It is. It's a little bit like, I suppose the closest thing that we've done before is Hatebreed. It's that kind of...
It's an empowering song.
Anger is an energy.
But yes. With better vocals.
That and fucking Hofstyle.
Oh, fucking Hostile, what a track.
Yes.
Full on hardcore punk metal ridiculousness.
Like any track that starts with 1, 2, 3, 4 and then goes for it, just like, which Ramones. Means that like 50% of the tracks on the second Superjoint album out of him going 1, 2, 3, 4.
Superjoint Ritual, or later Superjoint, I never really got into so much, but of Phil Anselmo's side projects, I really love the first Down record.
First Down record's great. I think it's better than all of the other Down records.
Yeah.
I've heard most of them.
Yeah.
And so I like that one the best.
Who are Down? Because I've not heard of them. And I realised when I was Down listening to the playlist that all of a sudden there's like, oh God, this is a different band.
So it's Phil Anselmo on vocals, Pepper Keenan from Corrosion of Conformity.
Dude from Crowbar?
Kirk Winstein from Crowbar. The first album was also Todd Strange from Crowbar.
That was it.
And then Jimmy Bauer from I Hate God on drums.
I looked them up briefly at the time when I was listening to that Stone the Crow song, which I actually thought was Pearl Jammy sound again, but then it's just his vocal.
That's, it's more Lynyrd Skynyrd Stone the Crows. It's fucking great.
It described so when I looked them up, it described them as sludge metal and like stoner rock. And I thought they were great genre names.
Southern boogie.
Are you not familiar with stoner rock?
No, not really.
Oh, stoner rock is basically like Sabbath influenced.
I did hear
Doom, but it's more.
Yeah.
It's lighter than Doom, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can hear them dark Sabbath undertones.
Yeah, stuff like Monster Magnet.
I guess it's weird because you think of a lot of metal in terms of sort of your Beavis and Butthead, lager fueled sort of thing, and you don't really associate metal with stoner. You know,
you've
not hung around with many metalheads.
Always, always associated metal with smoking lots of weed. It's a thing that is.
I thought it was much more sort of a lager frenzy thing. I mean,
no, God, no. It's
no,
not lager. Ale.
I know nothing of alcohol, so
it's Nuki Brown Ale. It's a whiskey and it's weed. this is the metal.
That song that they did, the Cowboys Do More Dope.
Rebel versus Rebel.
Yeah,
that was another side
put that
was
one.
Was that a serious thing? Was that a joke thing?
Yes.
Yeah, no.
It comes across as a bit of fun, and I hope I haven't misread it.
And a country guy.
So
it's like Boogie Woogie.
Yeah, yeah.
So Pantera, one of them really defining things that sets them apart from a lot of other metal bands is they are from Texas, and Phil Anselmo's from Louisiana. He's from New Orleans.
Where we get that drawly vocal.
They're very,
very proud of their southern roots, which is sometimes detrimental because they've got all that fucking Confederate flag bollocks. Which, if they were still going now, they would have been called out very much for. But they managed to avoid it by splitting up 18 years ago.
Yeah,
here comes the KKK.
we'll get into that later on.
Yeah.
The main thing about Pantera is they were so fucking tight.
Yes. It's a brother and brother thing.
It is. Dimebag and
Vinnie Paul
are brothers.
Right.
So and Rex had been playing with them for absolutely years.
Yeah.
So when they used to play live a fuck of a lot.
Yes.
They used to do really extensive tours. When they went into the studio to record Vulgar Display of Power, they had just come off 327 days of straight touring, with very few days off. They had 2 weeks off then, went straight into the studio. And because they played together so much, and by that point they'd been playing together for over a decade, they knew exactly how each other played. Whereas a lot of other bands have got, you know, you've got a rhythm guitarist, they've just got the one guitar and the bass, and Rex's bass lines almost always follow exactly what Dimebag's riff is doing.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes like you can't quite notice that the bass is there until Dimebag saws off to do one of his solos and the riff carries on just with the low end of it.
Yeah.
With the bass carrying it on.
Yeah. He's a very good bass player as well. Like, he's a really...
He has to be.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because they've got this and they don't fill that out with the rhythm guitar and loads of overdubs.
Yeah.
There's more space in there than a lot of metal bands have. It's not so much a wall of sound.
Also, have you come across the ridiculous Pantera tuning?
No.
Everything is down a quarter step. So they tune to normal, down a quarter step. So when you play along with Pantera on your perfectly tuned guitar, it always sounds out.
Why?
Do you know?
Because that's how they did.
So they could not tune to a tuner.
I was listening to...
You can take it down a quarter step from a tuner.
Oh, okay.
I was listening to Pantera live on the way in on the train today.
101 proof.
I don't remember. I don't remember
that's
what
the live
concert.
One that's on there. It's fucking.
No. I was just listening to a live album on Spotify. And so it must be a whole concert because you're getting him talking in between.
Yeah.
And at one point he just like sort of rams out a chord and just said, "That is the sound of a down-tuned guitar."
Yep,
because yeah, that down tune.
No, some of them were down a step as well.
Right,
but like they were not like fucking B tuned, fucking G tuned mentalists. But yeah, like Anselmo is a fucking great frontman as well. That's the thing.
When you watch him in the early days, the way he's fucking headbanging around that stage is absolutely ridiculous. He had to stop because he caused himself serious.
Yeah, like he hyperextended his knee, he's fucking injured himself. Like, he's always really thrown himself into his music.
Unfortunately, like Kurt Cobain, why he got into heroin.
Yep, because he did indeed get into heroin.
To deal with the pain.
Yeah.
He nearly died, didn't he?
He did die. He died for a couple of minutes and had to be resuscitated.
Yeah.
I remember reading about it in Kerrang, and I've seen an interview where he was talking about it on YouTube the other day.
I think it's probably why he smokes copious amounts of weed now.
Yes.
Basically the same, just without the death.
I don't know if it's quite
well,
the same.
Well, no, it's not.
But it's...
But, you know, pain-killing effects.
I would advocate it more than the other one.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So what year was the songs you put on the playlist, Suicide Note Part 1 and Part 2?
That was 96. That was on the Great Southern Trendkill.
Okay.
Which is my favourite Pantera album.
Right.
It's not many people's.
I've listened to it a lot, and it's definitely got up there now.
Yeah.
Part 1 actually reminded me of Led Zepp's Battle of Evermore.
Mm-hmm.
So Suicide Note Part 1 is an acoustic sort of... almost ambient type.
It's got a real suspended minor key feel about it.
They used to use it as their intro tape,
Then
go straight into Suicide Note Part 2.
I mean, the guitar,
which is brutal as fuck.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, the guitar sound in Part 1 made me think of the mandolin line in the Battle of Evermore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like raw, heartfelt, but delicate at the same time. And then I got to Part 2, and I've just written down. Fuck me, I wasn't ready for the change to Part 2 after Part 1.
It's quite some,
yeah,
also
it's amazing.
The opening track, which is the Great Southern Trendkill, the title track, which I will have put as the intro bit on the podcast, just for because it amuses me, the contrast between that and the Pastels. It's the most brutal opening ever.
Yep.
You've got Seth Putnam from Anal Cunt screaming on it.
Uh-huh.
All over that album, you've got loads of tracks where in the liner notes it says Seth screams on it.
Yeah.
Just adding additional vocals. This is the third time in three episodes that I've mentioned my cousin Tom. But years ago, Tom...
You love Tom.
Tom's ace, man. He lives in Australia now. I have to send him links to these.
Yeah, yeah.
Years ago, Tom was staying over at our house and I put it on... I had a cassette player alarm clock. Put that on.
Amazing.
To wake us up in the morning. And yeah, it's absolutely fucking terrifying. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, Part 2, it's very, very brutal, but it's still emotionally wrought and very heartfelt.
There's nothing about Anselmo's like vulgar display onwards vocals and lyrics that you can't say. Like, you can't say it's not emotional. It's fucking heartfelt.
He puts fucking everything into
horrific lyrics sometimes.
Yeah.
Just, oh, God, yeah. His lyrical brutality is...
Particularly on fucking
Was that Dressed Like a Target the same era?
No, that's Superjoint. Oh. That's
right. Because yeah, that was about ultra heavy, ultra brutal.
Yeah. I fucking love that song, Dressed Like a Target. That made me grow my hair again.
Excellent.
Yep.
No,
there's very much a song about just being like, fuck you on metal. I liked it. It was good.
Why have I completely blanked of the third, not the third album, but the third?
Far Beyond Driven.
Far Beyond Driven. That's got Good Friends and a Bottle of Pills.
Yeah, that's just horrendous.
Horrible.
That's the I Fucked Your Girlfriend Last Night yes. song, isn't it?
Yes.
Yep.
Which I don't think we put on the playlist.
No.
No, it's just a song about, like, yeah, literally just fucking someone's girlfriend, but only not to fuck his girlfriend just because he wanted to fuck something.
Yeah,
it's really
it's basically I'm doing this.
When you revisit it, it's just it's really fucking uncomfortable.
Yeah,
yeah,
it sounds it.
But you've also got on that album, you've got 5 Minutes Alone and I'm Broken, which are some of their. I mean, that was a number one album.
Yeah,
it was top 10 over here, but it was number one on the Billboard charts, and not even just the metal charts. That was actually number one album in America. Which is, I suppose it's always the one after your most successful one.
Yeah.
Because Vulgar Display of Power, which had Walk on it, was the album before that. And then they released that, and obviously everybody had bought that previously, so it was the anticipation, so everybody bought that all in one go. So
they've had a lot of shit luck, haven't they? heroin overdoses and
I don't know if heroin overdose counts as good luck because you kind of fucking did it yourself.
Okay, Dimebag. That is shit luck.
So for people who aren't aware, Dimebag Darrell was murdered on stage
by a fucking psychopath.
Yes, dude came in. This was after Pantera had split up.
Yep, and he was convinced that Dimebag had caused Pantera to split up,
yes.
And also that he had written all of Pantera's songs.
Yeah. So.
Decided to
murder Dimebag, some of the security staff, and a couple of people at the gig. Brutal murder. Don't do it, kids. Basically.
Yeah.
Dude was shot by police like minutes later because there happened. Somebody called 911 and there was a copper just round the corner.
Yeah. But fuck. That's why Randy Blythe almost went to prison for murder as well, because he saw a dude jump on stage because he was friends with Pantera.
That's the guy from Lamb of God?
Lamb of God, yeah, and he just saw the dude jump on stage and he just fucking shoved him off stage like no way.
Yeah.
And then he fell and died.
Yeah.
Shit.
So that changed the way a lot of metal musicians deal with stage invaders now.
Yeah.
Because before it used to be like, yeah, man, come on stage, fucking jump off stage.
Yeah.
Sick, that'll be awesome. Now it's like, have you got a fucking gun?
They're probably all right with it over here. It's just in America, where every fucking person has their own arsenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable subject that we've got to talk about.
Yeah.
Whether or not Phil Anselmo is a fucking white supremacist Nazi cunt.
Or is he just a fucking idiot?
So, really well publicised about 2 years ago.
Yep.
I mean, there's always been various accusations going around and rumours.
But they're always very fucking questionable accusations, that's the thing. Up until this one.
Up until this
one. It's always
one,
been like.
So.
That just sounds like you're talking shit, dude.
So, At Dimefest, which was a memorial gig for Dimebag, there were loads of different musicians. They basically formed a supergroup sort of thing. And Phil was performing for the first time in memorial to Dimebag. They'd done quite a few of these Dimefest things before. It was very fucking acrimonious. Phil wasn't even allowed to go to the funeral with how bad the breakup was.
Yeah, which is pretty fucked up.
Well,
I mean, I can. Yeah, I don't.
Whether they thought he was going to start a new shit or something there, because they were not getting on at all with. And obviously, Vinnie Paul was going to be there because it was his brother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they played this gig, and at the end of the gig, which is filmed, Phil Anselmo decides to do the fucking Sieg Heil salute and shouts "White Power."
Yep.
Right.
There's two explanations now.
Yeah.
One is
yeah, his immediate one is
they'd been drinking white wine backstage, and it was a joke about that, how they were all white powered.
Yes, right. Which when I was at school, when I was about probably 5 or 6 years old, I can remember getting into a fight in the playground,
mm-hmm.
and I actually scratched someone. Not proud of it. I was 6 years old, different times, and I can remember making up the excuse. And I really vividly remember this, that I was playing Batman and I was hypnotised, so I was walking with my arms out in front of me and my eyes were closed, and I crashed into him and somebody then jumped and pushed my head down. That is as plausible an excuse as that was.
Yes. The second excuse actually seems slightly more plausible, which is the he'd had three kids screaming "you're a fucking racist" at him for the entire show, and he was like, "I'll fucking show you racists, you pricks."
Yeah.
Right.
The third one, which he hasn't actually said, now this is why it's particularly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We've got a very good friend who is, I'm not going to name,
a drunken idiot at times.
When he's a fucking drunken idiot, he has been known to shout white power.
Yeah.
He's not a racist. We know he's not a racist.
He's just a fucking pillock.
He's just a fucking bellend, and he thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
He's not fucking intelligent enough to know that that's not fucking acceptable.
Yeah.
And as a result, our friendship has fucking strained to the point that I've not had that much to do with him in 3 years.
The problem is, I'm not convinced that Anselmo is in any way not intelligent.
Yeah.
I think he's very intelligent.
Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah. So I think the most likely of the three is the one where he was trying to fucking, I'll show these guys.
Yeah, because like, provoked. I mean, Pepper Keenan was like, came out straight away and was like, I've known this dude for fucking years. He is not a racist.
Whereas jumped straight to his defense.
Rob Flynn from Machine Head,
who is a well-known fucking white knighter, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Like, if he can ever get on the other side of an argument and look like the good guy, he will do it.
And he absolutely was there. Yeah. He came out the other side and put a video statement out the next day saying, I was there, there was no fucking white wine backstage.
Yeah, and then Anselmo came out and was like, he was there, he was disrespectful to me all night, he was being a fucking cunt, he's got an axe to grind.
Yeah.
So
it's all fucking tit-for-tat. It's really... But it really does fucking colour.
Then there was an episode... I listened to a podcast with Rex Brown, and Rex was like, honestly, I don't like addressing this, but no, he's not like that.
Yeah.
That is not that dude. Yeah. I've known him for fucking 20 years. 30 years.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, I am happy to conclude that he just made a fucking horrendous miscalculation.
Yeah.
Because, like, if two other dudes have come out and gone... No. Why the fuck would I be in a band with him?
But at the same time, I think what you've got to take away from it is always your own personal decision of whether you can separate the art from the artist.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't listen to his new stuff.
Yeah, because it's not as good.
Yeah, like, yeah, Filippo Chanselmo and the Illegals is not great. I didn't put any on the playlist. It's average.
But... Great Southern Trendkill is a fucking brilliant album, and I'm still going to listen to it.
And in fact, I don't even listen to any Pantera past that, because Reinventing the Steel was super average.
The other day I put Reinventing the Steel on just to confirm whether it was still shit, and it is
like,
still shit.
Hellbound's a fucking great track,
yeah,
and everything past that point. So like, that was the last good track they did, and it's the first track on that album.
Yeah, so essentially they had a run of four really fucking good albums.
And like, some Damage Plan has started, because of the Pantera listening for the... You know, some Damage Plan started turning up on my playlist.
I've never really listened to much Damage Plan.
It's pretty average, I'm going to say. It's what you expect from a band with the dude from Mudvayne as the main singer.
Yeah, fair play.
I mean, I know that Pantera aren't really a band I would actively put on and listen to, but if I hear Cemetery Gates, it gets stuck in my head for weeks.
I think
such a good tune.
More than any of the other songs that I've been listening to, Cemetery Gates keeps getting stuck in my head.
Yeah, really gets stuck in my head. And I don't mind it being in my head either. I really
because
like,
it's a good song.
It's a good song, yeah. So even though I wouldn't listen to them, it's not because they're not good.
And I can't believe that... got to mention this at some point when I was talking about the Great Southern Trendkill album.
Mm.
That fucking lead guitar bit at the end of Floods is beautiful.
Yes, yes, it is. It's one of the best solos.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd written really something melodic down about Floods. I really liked the vocals and then the spoken vocals underneath. Yeah. Really nice effect.
Yeah, like he's a really versatile vocalist.
He is.
Well, like,
yeah.
I just hope he's not actually a racist guy.
I tend to put him in the same category as Mike Patton, like as in really talent, does really weird shit, and he's just, there's something about him that you know he's trying to fuck you off. like I feel
we
Mike
came
Patton,
to the conclusion that he was a cunt as
yeah,
well, didn't
I it? Think he's probably happier with people disliking him.
Yeah, I can see that.
I also another, and I sound like I'm over defending him now, but like he's from fucking Louisiana. I feel like possibly like you couldn't be racist and live there nowadays.
I don't know.
I think
there's
going to
be a lot of it.
You reckon?
Well, there's the whole fucking Confederate flag thing for a start, with the defending slavery and that kind of bollocks.
Yeah. Oh, but, I don't.
It's rubbish and it fucking tarnishes things.
Yeah, it makes it easier for me to listen to a band that I like if I can just be like, I know Rasp.
If you can be just, I know Rasp.
No, Rasputin's sad about it as well. He's a big metal cat.
He is. I've got this image of a giant robot cat now.
Sadly not. He's just standard cat size. Maybe a little bit above average. Yeah. But yeah. He's got no teeth and he likes Pantera.
Awesome.
And dreamies.
I think we're probably wrapping it up about there.
Yes.
So, that was the letter P. The next letter in the alphabet is the letter Q.
Mm-hmm.
But
we've
got
hard.
Nothing for that.
Nothing.
There's a couple of bands, but we really don't give enough of a fuck about Queensryche.
I tell you what, Ren, I listened to Operation Mindcrime and it was fucking ace. Yeah. Honestly, Operation Mindcrime's pretty good.
Yeah, we were actually going to do Queensryche. Yeah.
We were, but we're going to
skip straight to the letter R.
Yes.
So we will be talking next month about
REM.
I was waiting for someone else to jump in with the wrong one then.
No. Nope.
Okay, REM and Red Hat
Refused
Fantas.
Again.
Refused, yeah, let's do Refused
We've
again.
We've done that.
Also.
So Tracy, you don't want us to do Red House Painters?
I do want us to do Red House Painters.
The weirdest thing.
And REM.
Like for me, is that the next time we record, or next time we play an episode, I will be married.
Actually, when this episode goes out.
Am I already married?
You got married 2 days before the episode goes out.
Christ.
So, congratulations, Ian and Lydia.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to me, because I'll be listening to this back and I'll be pleased that I'm happy for me.
Yes. Well done. Cool. So, I was going to stick a bit in there that I'd recorded later on, but I don't have to do that now.
Okay.
Awesome. So, we've been We Dig Music. Bye.
So this is the first time I've ever heard the Pastels, right?
Right, because you've done your homework really well.
I didn't really give enough of a shit. That's the problem. Because I knew it would sound like this. Sounds like a demo of Hindu Times by Oasis at the moment.
You did go for the fucking longest one on the list.
I'm not going to play all of it. I'll wait for him to start singing in a bit. I'll play a bit of singing, then I'm going to skip backwards a little so that you hear her singing too, Aggie.
See, this is entirely passable at the moment. I feel like it's going to get ruined in a minute. This is that guy that you hate, isn't it, Cole?
No, I don't hate him. No. No, you said something ages ago about you thought I'd hate him.
Oh, okay.
Who's the guy that you keep... Sounds like he'd be a drag queen. Is he?
No. He really isn't.
No, you know when, like, drag queens try and, like, sound like... put on a more feminine voice?
I think that's just his voice.
That's just his voice.
That's just weird.
That's just his voice.